There's not a single player in that squad I can look at right now and go, Mourinho's improved them.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody. Oh, James is recording. Hello, patrons. I just had to check and get the green light that we are recording. If we weren't recording, this wouldn't be much of a podcast for you guys. Happy Wednesday to all of you that picked up some United points yesterday. Happy. And those of you that didn't, doesn't matter. There's still a lot of football to be played this game week. Can you believe we're only four games in? So there's more football to be played than has passed, which by definition means there's more players to play than have played. So don't count your chickens and your eggs. Tottenham Day, James.
Can I just say one thing on last night? Because Twitter's already annoying me. Like, if you've got Marcus Rashford, keep Marcus Rashford. If you've got Anthony Martial, keep Anthony Martial. It's jumping from player to player. It's like over the last two Manchester United
Pointless.
Games. Last week, I have to get Martial. And we said, like, that if you get Martial, he's going to piss you off some game. It's absolutely standard.
The way around it is for me, the one thing is, if you don't have Bruno Fernandes, then by all means, shift one of them to get Bruno Fernandes.
Do you think?
If I was
genuinely, if I was sitting there right now already on three Manchester United players and Bruno Fernandes wasn't one of them, I would just carry on as I am.
Oh, I don't think I would. I think he's too pivotal now. The thing with Rashford and Martial is what's pissed people off a little bit more is the armband. A few of them captained. And when they blank as captains, it's really annoying. I own Martial and Fernandes. I will not captain Martial over Fernandes. Doesn't matter what game. So own them, fine. Keep them, fine. But don't gamble on the captaincy if that's what's going to frustrate you, is my opinion on it.
Fair enough. Mm. Yes, I think Fernandes is the best one. I think I've certainly had that opinion since their first game back against us. But yeah, genuinely, I wouldn't move, mate. If I had three and I didn't have him, I'd leave it. I'd suffer it, I think. Because it's not like Martial, Rashford are not captainable. Not at all. I agree with what you're saying, that I would always personally at the moment have a preference for Fernandes, because I think on a given week, as seen last night, he's capable of going mental. I mean, had he stayed on the pitch for the final half hour, he could have done a lot more damage.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, really, really could. Right, let's get through some of these Slack questions that have come in from everybody. Some are quick and easy, some are not. Frank is just asked a question literally a minute ago. We're going newest to oldest, James, because there's no time relevancy on any of these.
Cool.
Player of the season for each of your clubs.
Can you start?
No brainer. It's got to be Declan Rice for us this year. Got to be, just for the consistency, played every game. I don't think there are very many games where you could question his commitment and effort, gets about the pitch, or play wherever you need him to, defensive midfield, centre-back. It's a no-brainer just for the consistency. I think we've had other players that have had fits and starts and periods where they've been decent, but this season, over the course of the entire season, that's it. Declan Rice, no-brainer.
I think by default, I'd have to go for Son, but I'd like to. I probably won't vote. That's how strongly I'd feel about it this season. I probably won't, and I've never not done that before. I probably just wouldn't bother, because I don't think any of them have earned that this year.
Not even just on effort?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. What's the effort? Get behind the ball when you lose it. No, look, it's been a bad season for us. I wasn't joking the other week when I said I think Aurier's been one of our better players and I'd rate him at about a 6 out of 10 for the season. It's just been bad. I mean, what's the alternatives? Kane's had a long period of injury. So Sissoko, like Alderweireld, Sanchez, all of them, they've been in and out of the team. Lo Celso never played till, what, November, December? So, yeah, by default, it would be Son. But, not great.
Okay, next question is Pirlo's pen. You can sign anyone tomorrow for your club. Who would it be?
Messi?
Nah, he's too old now.
I don't give a fuck, mate.
Yeah, I mean, that's the easy answer to want to take a Messi. Kevin De Bruyne, one of these guys.
Yeah, I've mentioned Thiago before. I think he's the sort of footballer that Tottenham really need at the moment. So, I mean, I don't even know if that's particularly realistic, to be honest with you, but that would roughly be my shout. Why does she always start shouting at him when I start fucking recording? Honestly, can you hear her?
He knows. Not hell. That loud, to be honest with you, but there you go. I honestly think one of the things we've struggled with for a long time is a goal scorer. We've not had a 15, 20 goal a season goal scorer for as long as I can remember. So for me, I would go with like an Mbappe or a straight out and out striker whose job is nothing but to put the ball in the back of the net. So I think a striker for us is what I would want. I know someone from midfield that could run a game and link up midfield and attack would be nice as well. But a straight up goal scorer, if we scored an extra 10 goals in a season, it would make such a big difference to us.
Well, you haven't, you haven't had a player get 20 since 1986.
Yeah, which is exactly.
It's staggering, by the way.
Mate. It's incredible. And so many seasons there, we've had like the likes of Kevin Nolan or midfielder.
That's, that includes even years in the Championship and that as well.
Mm. Yeah. It's, who was the last? Cotty,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, Tony Cotty. Like that? It was like 1986.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. Incredible. So a goal scorer, 20 goal a season goal scorer. And right now for me, in front of goal is straight up, with his age and potential, Mbappe is like fire. So yeah, I'd go with Mbappe.
I'm sure Sullivan and Gold will get the money out for Mbappe, mate.
What season was the first that you can remember that you regularly attended games?
90, 91. That's not two answers, by the way. It's a season.
Yeah.
Every home game since, bar coronavirus. So, yeah, that's it. That's when I was 6 years old. I could probably take you through the whole season now over the next 20 minutes if you want.
For me, yeah.
It wasn't great. It got fucked up from about December. It started all right.
For me, it was the season after Tevez Mascherano. I went to quite a few games that season with Tevez Mascherano. What was that? 4-5?
Tevez Mascherano, 6-7.
So the year after that was when I first... So if you remember, we announced him quite late in the window.
That's right.
Tevez and Mascherano. And then I remember being on the phone to my brother and him being like, you know what? We should get season tickets. Because we never had season tickets before that. And obviously they were all fully sold out and there was no hope of getting one for love nor money. But we made a commitment at that time, right, next year we're gonna pony up and get these season tickets in and start going regularly. So... It was the season after that we started going more regularly.
That easy, was it? Just get a season ticket next year.
We did have to, and this sounds stupid, right? We had to go in the most expensive category there was. But even then, at the bowling, that was still only, if I can remember, I might have paid 500 quid.
Oh, you're hurting my feelings. And what are you paying now?
Tops, 625.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think I'm category C. At 625. I'm pretty sure
625 and binoculars for a tenner is not bad, mate.
Nah, it's not that bad where we are. Right, okay, next question. Harbour Boy, who is your pick for breakthrough player of the year? Who's come through from young talent?
Spurs are not in the position they were 10 years ago in terms of youth products coming through. I mean, that's very difficult. I think Oliver Skipp has established himself as a member of the squad, but not a lot more. It's worth saying he's still only, 18? So he's a young boy. When Foyth hasn't progressed, I was gutted that he had the injury against Munich in pre-season because it looked like he was going to start the season, actually, at right back under Pochettino, and it might have gone very, very differently for him. Ryan Sessegnon under Mourinho is just not going to work, I'm afraid, by the looks of things. Troy Parrott has obviously established himself to be called upon from a squad position. He's still only 17.
He is 17 years old. 17 years old is a joke, mate. He's doing his GCSEs. That can't be a professional footballer.
Harry Winks, you know, we can't class in this category anymore. Played in the Champions League final last year, right? So it's not a joke.
He's not a breakthrough.
No, so I can't give you an answer on that. I guess Oliver Skipp, because he's maintained his place in the squad. There was a lot of fear amongst Tottenham fans that he would not be a Mourinho type player and therefore you would see him farmed out on loan and stuff. And I think a loan actually probably would do him good to just physicality wise, because he doesn't mind a tackle on that. Going to have a year in the Championship wouldn't do any harm at all. That's as close as I can get to a breakthrough player for you. You got anything?
it's difficult for our place as well with the lack of youth breaking through this year. I mean, Ngakia had some really good games, but he's only played 5 games this season. So is he really, has he broken through? The games he's played, he's done okay, but and now he's leaving. So I can't really say he's broken through, but he's the only youth player that's had any minutes. I'd then default to Bowen. I mean, he's still young.
Do we think really maybe this was aimed as a question not for Tottenham and West Ham?
Yeah, maybe.
Because we're struggling.
Maybe.
I mean, if I look outside, the first name that springs to mind, I know it's kind of current, it's fresh in people's minds, but Mason Greenwood.
Foden. Oh, Mason, yeah. He's been playing well. Or Foden.
Yeah. We saw plenty of Foden last year as well. I mean, breakout for me really is described as someone who certainly wouldn't have been considered as a first team regular at the start of the season, but is by the end. And I think Greenwood, now, if you said right now, what's United's best 11, he's in it. Hmm. Not a joke anymore. So he's extremely talented, not phased in front of goal, can go left, right. Seen a lot of the players saying it's quite often they can't tell the difference between his left and right. I think he does slightly favour his left, clearly. But they say, like, in training and stuff, if he feels like it, will take corners and penalties with his right foot and stuff. He's English,
being
mate. Two-footed, brilliant.
Is very, very rare nowadays. So, yeah, I agree with you on that. We've got a question from Shaker, and Shaker probably thinks this is a 3-hour podcast with this question. But I'm going to only give you 60 seconds on it, James.
Okay.
And I apologise for that because I didn't ask the question. It's not the worst question. What do you need to see from Mourinho that would change your opinion on him?
Oh my gosh, yes, that is a whole podcast, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Where I'm trying to get in my mindset is, and actually it's where I've been since he walked in the door, is try and understand who he is, what his methodologies are, whether I like it or dislike it. The major, major gripe for me at the moment is I can't see any difference in the team that I watched 6 months ago. Now, there's a game tomorrow which I think for Mourinho can be quite pivotal, actually, because Pochettino's last game was Sheffield United, and a lot of the guys will remember that's the podcast afterwards where for the first time I really started questioning what I was watching, mainly in credit because of how good Sheffield United were on the day at Tottenham, the way they were coached, the way we played against them. Sheffield United should have won the game on the day. We got away with it.
Mm-hmm.
We got away with a 1-1 at home, Sheffield United. I mean, it's not on, right? So at that point, I'm looking at it and going, right, this is one game too many now where the players look like they're not responding. And for the first time, I began to accept he might have to go here. And when he went, Pochettino, I don't disagree that it was, for whatever reason, it went so badly wrong that it was probably the right decision for him to go. What I want to see from Mourinho is Mourinho being Mourinho. I want to see defensive improvements in the way the team's played. Now, if I just take the last 2 games in isolation, you could say that perhaps a little bit of time on the training pitch, stuff is starting to work. Can I judge that on how defensive, in terms of how deep we got against Manchester United and playing against yourselves? I'm not sure I can make that judgment yet. What I want to see him is, I tell you what, I'll sum it up like this. I want to see be in a position where I can say he's improved that player. Any player.
Okay.
There's nobody at that football club I can say is a better player now than when Pochettino walked out the door. Not a single one. Right. So you could say Eric Dyer has been very good at centre-half recently. By the way, I've heard rumours that he's in for a very lengthy ban and it's due at any point. Might be something to be aware of from the whole going in the crowd thing against Norwich.
Although,
quite why you haven't made the decision yet on that, I'm not very sure. So you could say, so that's the sort of thing where I'm starting to see now a little bit, okay, is he re-energising Dyer? Is Dyer now going to convert into a very good centre-half who's capable of challenging to, say, play alongside Harry Maguire for England? A lot of guys will laugh at that comment. But is he trying to mould that player in him, a leader, like I've spoken about Dyer? He's a leader. Okay, fine. Get those traits out of him. Other than that, are you saying to me, he's improved Aurea, or he's improved Ben Davies or Ryan Sessegnon, or anybody in that squad? He's got Son firing in a way he wasn't before. Anything. There's not a single player in that squad I can look at right now and go, Mourinho's improved them.
Hmm.
So at which point Should I be there giving him some sort of praise or something? I want to see things in terms of his coaching and his tactical. At the moment, all I continue to see is a manager who specialises in minimising risk. That's his speciality, minimising risk.
That's quite well summarised, James. There we go. I hope, Shaker, that answers your question.
Let's keep going. I want him to prove me wrong. Do you know what I want to see tomorrow? When I say there's certain things I want to see in terms of we've got good attacking players, utilise them, right? I would be so impressed if we go to Sheffield United tomorrow as shit and win 1-0. Mm. It's that sort of fixture. Go and get the result. Fuck off. Come back. Then go and perform against Everton on Monday. There's differences in what I want to see in certain games from them.
Let's see. This is from Rob Pick. What's the best performance by an opposition team that you have both seen live?
Oh, that's a good question.
I don't really remember games in the same way, but there's two that stand out at the moment. One was, every time City come to our place and spank us, it's obviously a pleasure to watch them, despite getting battered. First day of the season this year, they were good, but it was first day of the season. Last year when they came and they beat us 4-0 under the lights, that was when they were at their best with Sané on one side, Sterling on the other. And it was just Sterling sticking it in the far post for Sané to come in and score. Sané sticking it on the far side for Sterling to score. The way the players set up to just literally, those two players specifically, to hug the touchlines and spread the pitch. Just the way they set up, just we couldn't cope with that. And they're good technically, but tactically as well, and the way they set up and execute. It's both elements of it that they have that's incredible. And the other team that actually deserve a shout out here for me was this season, was when Leicester came to town over the Christmas period.
Leicester's reserves.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, right? It wasn't their first team, but they didn't care. They still played with that same style. And I pointed it out after they came to our place, but they were leaving three players up at corners. And that just showed intent and aggression. And that was it. This is what we're going to do. Come on then. And they executed that game plan as well. It's all well and good having a game plan, trying to set up a certain way and then getting your pants pulled down. They obviously beat us on that day. And I like that from Leicester. I think they might not go down in memory as the greatest team or City will, but they both executed and they were both very, very good. And you just got to hold your hands up. On this day, we are getting beaten by a team that are better than us. Take it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been quite blessed in terms of some of the teams I've seen.
You've got Champions League
in the last
10
years, yeah. So, obviously, shout out for the Bayern Munich team that destroyed us this year, right? The only thing I'd say about that is, at half-time, we were a little bit unlucky to be behind, actually. What then occurred once they got a couple of goals in front was a freak. Real Madrid team of 2011 was a very good team. Obviously, had Ronaldo, Adebayor up front. But it was a very good team. But they weren't as good as the Barcelona team that beat them in the semi. I would put probably even the Barcelona team that I watched at Wembley last year above that, actually. So, I mean, any team with Messi, I'm kind of going to be salivating over. In terms of domestically, on a one given day, the one that springs to mind is when Liverpool beat us 5-0 at White Hart Lane in 2013. They beat us 5-0, it should have been about 15-0. They absolutely destroyed us. That was a painful walk out the ground in terms of the disparity between two teams who were going into that season and had similar objectives of trying to finish top four. Remember, this was the period of Suarez, Sterling, Sturridge, where they were beginning to make a push together from nowhere to then fight for the title. That's the game that probably stands out the most, where I've gone, my God, there are giant strides. There's been a few times with Arsenal, but it's different because of the derby. The Chelsea teams of Mourinho's first, very good, and plenty of times United under Ferguson were just miles ahead of us. I think particularly around the 99 team actually really, really give us massive troubles in the mid-90s to the late 90s. We didn't beat them for a good 8 or 9 years, I don't think. They were very good.
Wow. Mm. We've got a question from Baz that leads on to what you're talking about from Bayern Munich, for example. You mentioned after seeing Lewandowski live that he was a lot better than you thought. What was it specifically that surprised
everything.
You?
Everything. But surprised is okay. Wrong.
That's not specific.
Everything about him. The one thing, well, I always knew was that. In terms of finishing, I always knew he was one of the best finishers around. What you get to see a live game is completely different to some of the TV experience. When, for example, when it went to like 5-6-2, my dad said to me, he was like, what are you doing? Like, do you want to fuck off? And I was like, to be honest with you, if I can remove myself for a moment, I'm enjoying watching them. If it wasn't against my team, I'd be enjoying what I was seeing. So I'm learning something. In all that pain and that misery of getting absolutely battered, I'm like, wow, these guys are great. With him specifically, I mean, the game that night hinged on a lot of things in terms of the counter-attacking, how good Serge Gnabry was, and the game really changed when they brought Thiago on at half-time. Lewandowski's all-round game is so much better than I thought it was in terms of everything that he did was immaculate in terms of his first touch, his control, movement, exceptional. Better in the air than I thought he was. Just everything about him screamed world class. And that made me think, yeah, much better than what I'd always thought was. Great finisher, but a little bit blessed to be playing in great teams. So that people remember the great night he had for Dortmund in the Champions League semi-final. We scored 4 times against Real Madrid. And he was astonishingly good in front of goal. This was an all-round performance where I thought, do you know what? You're a lot better than the guy who was playing in the same position up front for me. And that's being Kane. And it's not often I'm sit there left thinking that.
I hope that answers your question, Baz. Ben Moxham, favourite kit?
Of Spurs is?
Of course.
Oh. I really liked a kit which we never won in. Genuinely. It was a navy blue Adidas with three stripes, Holston from 2000-2001. And genuinely, I think we won a home game in it actually because we played the, it would have been, yeah, oh yeah, 2000-2001. We played in it at home in the last game of the previous season and beat Sunderland. But when we was officially meant to have it, we never won another game in it. Really nice shirt. I preferred the Holston Adidas ones. And I guess for nostalgia, the 1991 Cup Final kit, where it was the first kit as well where it felt like it moved away from tight shorts. The kit was based on an idea of how Spurs originally looked when they moved to white in the late 1800s.
Yeah.
The Spurs originally played in like chocolate and brown halves. People might remember there's been a few brown kits over the last 15 years. That's part why. There was a kit for a very brief period, people probably won't notice, for a year, which was red and blue. There was all sorts of, and you'll find that historically with a lot of football clubs, by the way, until eventually they settled on the white and navy blue, which was adopted from Preston North End, who were the first ever double winners in 1880 something motherfucker. That's the history of the shirt. That's where the 91. If you asked me to pin one, I'd probably say yeah. That said, I prefer white socks to navy socks.
Interesting. For me, it's the 99-2000 season.
Got me a Dagenham Motors or something.
Nah, it wasn't. That was when we moved to Dr. Martin's.
Okay. Oh, the Decanio goal.
Decanio goal collar. Because that was the first shirt I owned as well. So you used to be able to flick the collar up on that one. So that was pretty cool. Dagenham Motors. Dr. Martens was the sponsor on that one. And also, that kit was made for us by Fila.
Yeah.
And in the mid-90s, 94, 95, 96, and I specifically remember it was 96, 97 at the time, I bought a pair of Fila Grant Hill 2 trainers, or Grant Hill 96s, if anyone wants to check these bad boys out, because I used to play basketball a little bit at the time. Wasn't very good, but, you know, used to play with them. So everybody was all about the Nike Air Jordans and the Air Max and all that at the time, but Nike Air Jordans were the one. But Fila had Grant Hill, who was a great basketball player, and then and I'd have those trainers that were my put them in the box after you've worn them type trainers. And then Fila came and made our kit, and it was a cool collar, and then DiCanio scored the goal in it as well. So I remember that kit as well. It probably cost me about 75 quid to get a replica shirt of that season. Now it takes the piss, doesn't it? But there you go. That was my favourite shirt.
The Avoco shirt you have, which is from the late 80s, obviously before your time.
About 30 quid.
It's a nice shirt, that is.
It's not bad, but you know, as a replica shirt, it's made of quite a thick, heavy cotton. So it's not the most comfortable to wear.
The shirts now, they're so thin. I mean, I haven't bought a replica shirt for probably 4 or 5 years now, but I always used to wear a t-shirt underneath, which was thicker cotton. Because them bastards will... I sweat during
keep
games.
Cold.
No, I sweat during games. Them bastards make you smell, mate. they're sweat absorbers, aren't they? They're meant to absorb your sweat for the players. They're not great for oversized stomachs like me, etc.
Rob Pick's got another question. I tend to ask you about individual players. One I'd forgotten until I watched Premier League years the other day was Pavlyuchenko. What did you think of him?
Super Pav.
And I had to Google him. Really? 78 games, just to see his record. I couldn't remember whether he was any good. 20 goals in 78 games. Isn't the worst striker that you've ever seen.
No, but it's a 1-in-4 ratio. It's worth saying there's a lot of substitute appearances in there as well. Seems probably more of a 1-in-3 kind of guy. Thing with Pav was he was bought immediately as a replacement for Berbatov. Same day, basically, when all that was going on, where Man City suddenly made the bid, and Berbatov, obviously, he already had it pre-agreed, he was going to United. So that had a certain amount of expectation. And actually, as a last-minute transfer, it was off the back of a very good Euro 2008 where Russia had reached the semi-finals. It felt like a good fit. It felt right. He was erratic. I tell you what, he had certain days where he'd score certain goals and you'd think, my goodness, there's a player in there. Certain ones, I remember a goal he scored against Chelsea over the Christmas period where the ball came onto him outside the box and his first touch on his right foot was so good, and then he's bent it into the bottom corner past Petr Cech from the edge of the area with his left foot, and you think, there's a player in there. Certain times he used to drag it either side and he'd smash it into the far corner and you think, he really can finish, but he'd have days. He'd have days. I would not describe him as a bad player. I would describe him as good.
There you go. 7 out of 10.
Not more. Like, if I think of I can name 10 strikers I've seen at Spurs better in the last 25 years with no hesitation. And he did play a very pivotal role when Redknapp had completely discarded him towards the end of the 9-10 season. Including a couple and a mud heap at Wigan, which was an important win. But nah, I wasn't gutted when he went. It wasn't good enough.
No. Joe Jenkins here. Joe has again. I'd be interested in hearing you both negotiating a mutually beneficial swap deal for players. Not really a question, but a request. Who do you want?
What, from your lot?
Yeah.
No one.
There's no one you would take.
I would take Declan Rice. Of course I would.
All right. So for Declan Rice, who are you going to give me?
Okay. That's interesting. Well, you need a direct replacement, don't you? So do you want to...
Nah. I don't, give me Bergwijn.
Have him.
All right. Bergwijn for Rice. Done deal. There we go. We can move on. I think Bergwijn's got a lot of potential. What did you pay for Bergwijn? 35, 40 million?
Nah, cheap. About 22, I think.
Wow, that's a good deal. One thing we haven't spoken about, let's talk about it on the main podcast, is how Bayern Munich are stealing Leroy Sané for 54 million.
They're not, are they?
You can't... Well, what? Because he's got 1 year left on his contract.
Just briefly on Bergwijn, he's showing flashes of very, very good things. And no, I wouldn't want him to go. He's not a player I'm going to be critical of at the moment. Just my team needs to sort shit out defensively.
Yeah.
On Sané... We can talk about it briefly. I mean, it's a year to go on a contract, so it shouldn't be...
Yeah, that affects the price massively. I understand that. But, I mean, just it hurts, right? When you think you've got to pay 120 for Sancho to get him in, but Leroy Sané is going in a different
direction. Well, United have said they won't pay more than 50 million for Sancho, which is just complete bullshit. They're just trying to play Dortmund. Because they know that they know that Sancho wants to go, I think. But I think Sancho's also... He's not going to... I don't think he's going to cause a huff. He knows Dortmund give him an amazing opportunity, right? So I think the most likely as that would stand at the moment, plus the development of Mason Greenwood, is that that's beginning to look like a transfer that will probably be on hold till next year, as it would stand, would be my guess.
Mm.
But yeah, Manchester United are not getting Jadon Sancho for 50 million.
Nah,
they are smoking some serious gear if that's what they think.
Clean sheet wipeout, Matt. What's the best place to get a pre-match pint or pie before a game outside of the stadium, preferably accepting of away fans, one day will be allowed back in, right?
At your place?
Well, at both of our places. I can answer for my place. And this is probably not really very helpful, Matt, because I take my kids who are little, I'm not really going down the boozer and having a few drinks before the game. But there's a place that I go that a few times I've met up with Chris, FPL addict, and Tom, and that's our kind of go-to place. And it's called Mother Kelly's. And it's actually the other side of the shopping centre to the stadium. And it's very, very quiet, but it's one of these cool bougie pubs where they sell like loads, like 50 different types of beer, and they serve them in halves or like smaller sizes so you can try loads of random beers. It's got a nice terrace, and a couple of doors down is actually a little Chinese place that you can get noodles or rice and chicken. And it's quiet, like it's the other direction to the stadium. So we normally head there, have a couple of drinks and relax because it's not that busy. I met Adam there, Leather Barrow, who's one of our followers as well. And that's the pub that I go to just because it's quiet, easy out of the way. Even when I met up with Badger, I mean, there's no issues for away fans and stuff. That's where he came and we had a pint. So Mother Kelly's is the one for me. But I can't say I'm like experienced and have been to every pub in the area, so I can tell you which one. The Bat and Ball is quite popular, but I don't know how they are with away fans. That's where I bumped into Tony Cotty before one of the games. So the Bat and Ball is another one that people go to. But I'd go to Mother Kelly's. There we go. What do you think, James?
There isn't much around Tottenham. I mean, the first thing to say is, in terms of trying to get an atmosphere with your own, the only place is in the ground at Tottenham, really. Other than that, I mean, I met Neil Grover before we played Bournemouth in the Beehive, which is a fair walk from the ground. It's a good 20-minute walk or so. But Neil came in his Bournemouth shirt and that, and it was fine. I think the fact that he was with me and I'm in my Spurs colours wasn't a problem. Plus, Bournemouth is not a club.
It's Bournemouth, right? And you're going to fight with Bournemouth, are you?
Who was the question for? Was it Matt clean sheet?
Matt, yeah.
At least Saints, isn't he? So, again, it wouldn't be an issue if Matt wanted to go somewhere like that. I don't know how it would be received if you turned up with six of you in colours together. The fact that Neil was drinking with me means it's not going to be an issue, for example. So, probably the Beehive, but it's a fair old walk from the ground, as it is with many of the cases, particularly with the London grounds now, that you ain't really getting in anywhere close as an away fan because of the police operation.
Yeah, the security and all that. You may as well just get inside and have a drink inside.
Back in the day,
how many are you going to drink?
Back in the day, you could probably chance it and get on the train from Liverpool Street at 2:15. Mm. Two. You ain't going to get in the ground for kickoff now if you do that.
No.
So,
no.
Other than that, it's probably a few places in Enfield, which is a shorter train journey. But again, you're going to be leaving like 2:15. That's even the case with a Beehive, 20-minute walk. Once you do the security and that, you ain't going to be in the ground anything before 2:45. So,
no. Couple more questions, James, to get through. Thing you disliked most about your old stadium?
Oh my God, nothing.
This one's a hard one because everything that I come up with is no better really at the new stadium. Like getting in and out was crap. But it's crap getting in and out of the new one all of a sudden.
It wasn't crap getting in the old one. It was great.
Really? Easier than
we're
the
talking about pubs. I used to go to...
No, we're talking about the stadium.
No, but like I'm getting saying the difference. I used to
go
to a pub which was the other end of Tottenham High Road called the White Horse. I used to meet a fella going back 15 years or so. We used to leave there at 2:35, 2:40, and I'd be in the ground comfortably for kickoff. No problem at all. I think the one thing was the pillars on the east stand, which would be the side the camera used to be, so a lot of people might not know about that, but these big-ass pillars, you used to think that there should have been a way to remove them. Other than that, I loved the place. I didn't particularly
It's hard to find things.
I didn't particularly like the amount of boxes on the West End, but it was something that was bought in the 80s. I rebuilt in the early 80s, and it was built with that design for boxes. And Spurs were forward thinking in that regard in terms of making higher volumes of money from people who were prepared to pay it. So, yeah, but I loved the place. It was the greatest place in the world.
Okay, which manager was worse between Di Canio and Sherwood?
That's a brilliant. I think Sherwood. Asked that question? That's a great question.
Sorry, Mike Day. Mike, how's it going, Mike? It's
Di Canio, isn't it? I think.
I'll still take him, though. If you gave me the choice now, I'd still take Paolo, because at least you're going to have some fun along the way.
Right, how do you feel? Chelsea batter you 6-0 tonight, right? And you wake up tomorrow morning and Di Canio is taking over. How do you feel?
There's a little bit of me that knows I'm about to have some fun along the way.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Likes of Luton and Barnsley next year, maybe.
It doesn't matter. There'll be some fun along the way. Yeah, I wouldn't want either, to be honest.
Well, Tim Sherwood is a complete fraud, mate. Fraud. And the one thing I credit him for, when he took over from AVB, he immediately changed the style of football. He was like, do you know what? Again, we've got some attacking players going attack. It was a car crash. I always remember, it always sticks out in my mind, that he sat on goals on Sunday at the end of the season, talking to Kamara and Ben Shepherd, and saying now Spurs' results improved dramatically around it, because he had this famous rant after we lost 4-0 at Chelsea, and he said it basically completely dismissed us, saying Spurs fans are hoping for top four, yeah, they're dreamers, they need to realise what the status of the football club is and that. Yeah, by the way, Pochettino nearly won me a league 2 years later, you fucking prick. But he said it was based on that one game that caused me problems. But if you look at the results afterwards, they were so much better. Really? Go and look at results afterwards. We lost 1-0 at home to Arsenal. We were absolutely destroyed 3-1 at home by Benfica. We lost 4-0 at Liverpool. These were in the game straight afterwards, by the way. He was so deluded. He used to twist everything for his own gains. He was basically, all right, lads, go and enjoy yourselves. 4-4-2. Let's crack on. That's all it was.
The final question or questions go to Dylan. Since you started following your respective clubs, who's been your most liked and most disliked players from the opposing club? Liked players. I think David Ginola always stands out because he had that class and silky smooth, and him and Gareth Bale. Like, you can't argue with Bale just because he was fucking amazing.
The pair of them you mentioned weren't bad, mate.
Yeah, and David Ginola, like, when you listen to interviews and stuff with Ginola afterwards, and now he's often a pundit on Talksport or whatever, he's just a fun, happy guy. He just, like, you'd enjoy having a couple of pints with David Ginola and just chatting, because he's always never comes across as arrogant or a dickhead, and still, you know that your wife would leave you for him any day.
All day long.
So I like David Ginola and Gareth Bale probably are up there. In terms of dislikes, don't know. Not really a hater. I'd have to think about that one. What about you?
Scott Parker. Jermaine Defoe.
Yeah. I mean, everybody that came to you.
Freddie Canute. Michael Carrick. Any of them. I think the one I really admired and thought, oh my God, they've got a talent there. Well, two, actually. It was Rio, but especially Joe Cole. Mm. In his younger years before he went to Chelsea, I think that was one you kept thinking, I'd like to get older. Man, he's a very good player.
What about Demi Payet? You didn't like a bit of Demi Payet when he banged a few?
Yeah, I think because of his age, probably looked at that differently.
Yeah.
He was. I mean, yeah, in that 15-16 season, he was absolutely fantastic for you. I guess because he was already late 20s, I thought of it a little bit differently. But yeah, I mean, my God, he could play. And there was no doubt about it. He was a very good footballer. In terms of hate, I don't know. It's probably that little rat now, isn't it? Wilshere. It doesn't play, so it just doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't really count.
No.
Nah. A pick. Shout out!
I'll tell you a shout out for as well. It's Dean Ashton, by the way.
Oh, he was decent as well. He just didn't play enough, unfortunately. Bit of a shame.
Yeah.
Pick a player from your current squad that will be a good Spurs manager in the future. Are you just going to go with Harry Kane?
No, I'm not convinced he will be, actually, because I think he's got so much interest in American sports and stuff like that. Mm. I can see him pissing off and going to live in America, actually, when his career's finished.
Yep.
Yeah, I tell you what, there's not many. Serge Aurier? Jokes. Harry Winks might be one, actually. He's very young at the moment, but he's got the mentality that... I mean, he's a bit of a student at the game. It might come out in later years. And Eric Dier, from his leadership skills perspective, could be another one. But I wouldn't say... There's been times at Spurs where I've gone, wow, there's so many candidates who could take that sort of role. There's not at the moment in the current squad.
I agree with you from our point of view. So from West Ham, I'm going to take the simple options and say Mark Noble. Whether or not he's tactically aware, I don't know. But I think he is a leader in amongst there. So if he can have good coaches around him, then potentially you'd have the potential to do it. And I reckon one day he will. When you get players like that, one club guys... And we're in the shits one season where we're just looking for someone to come in and rescue it. Like Brooking did for us a couple of times or whatever. I think Noble's got the potential there to do it. So
do you know who else might be a shout, actually? Because it's obviously very topical at the moment, actually. Is Sissoko.
Yeah, potentially.
And someone that strikes me in terms of the way he's progressed in terms of his learnings under Pochettino, etc. And some of the managers he's worked through in the years. Actually, he's a shout. Would he get the opportunity, though?
We don't know. There we go, James. That was all the Twitter questions for today for Tottenham. A slightly longer show, but I hope you guys enjoyed it and a little bit of looking back at some players and stadiums and what have you. Don't forget to listen to Planet Sky FF if you're a Sky fantasy football player, which went out earlier today. James is on a live stream tomorrow. We've got a quiz coming at you tomorrow all about the year 2010, followed by a full podcast on Friday with a Game Week 33 preview that's just for you patrons as well. James will do a deadline stream on Saturday. Champ Man, if you're playing, that's all happening in and around as well. And you know about all of this content anyway. So stay tuned. Find out the release schedule on Patreon, just the posts that are out there. But most importantly, stay safe and enjoy your Wednesday.
Before you finish,
tell me.
Prediction tonight?
For us...
No, for Bournemouth and Newcastle.
Bournemouth Newcastle is going to be 6-0 to Newcastle.
And Solanke's going to get a hat trick.
1-1.
Oh, you think you get something, yeah?
I have to be optimistic, Jase.
Do you? You could also be a realist.
1-1. I think they've had the FA Cup game. I'm going to go 1-1. 1-1.
Can't see it. The only thing I would say is. Something to watch out for tonight a little bit is Chelsea have shown strength in the last two games in terms of their counter-attacking. Will West Ham allow them that opportunity tonight? They might find elements of the game quite difficult tonight, I think. I don't think they'll batter you, for example.
Nah, I'm going to go with the 1-1.
Tottenham tomorrow, depends if O'Connell plays or not. If O'Connell plays, I think they'll beat us. If he doesn't, I think we'll win.
I think that's going to be a 1-1 as well, James. I'm going to put them down both...
I think that'll be 1-0 one way or the other.
There we go. And there we go. That's the show. Thanks for tuning in. Stay safe. Ciao for now.
Thank you, patrons. Good luck this evening. Cue music, man, Charlie.
The Fantasy Football Show.